Hello and welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners and podcast listeners everywhere. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx.
She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. Follow her voice, as straight talk as nice. She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, oh yeah. Don't be surprised if you wanna listen twice. Make decisions, find the right choice. Know yourself better, find your own voice. It's okay if you need help today, cause everybody needs a little push. From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
This weekly show, Everybody Needs a Little Push, with Ellen Stewart, the pushy broad from the Bronx, will be aired every Wednesdays on Transformation Talk Radio and podcast stations everywhere at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. I am delighted to bring you my weekly podcast program, which I hope will inspire you, coach you,
sometimes make you laugh,
and give you the push moment you need to move forward. And I'm going to do it the pushy Broadway. Straight up. No BS, easy, quick, with answers, suggestions, and directions that will give you a coaching experience that will be part cheerleader and part drill sergeant. Because everybody needs a little push from time to time. And here comes yours.
Everybody, 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 everybody needs a little push.
Everybody needs a little push.
Everybody, 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 everybody needs a little push.
What really separates successful relationships from unsuccessful ones? Once you've found that special someone, what happens next? How does it stay special? Everyone says that relationships take work, but that just seems like a chore to me. I prefer to say that relationships take exercise. Let's take a look at some of the definitions of exercise. As a noun, exercise is an activity requiring physical effort, carried out especially to sustain or improve health and fitness. Exercise improves your heart, a task or activity done to practice or test a skill. A process or activity carried out for a specific purpose, especially when concerned with a specific area or skill, a practice, an application. Like, one must learn to exercise patience. To the pushy broad from the Bronx, relationships are very much like exercise. Relationships require effort, both physical and emotional. They must be carried out to sustain or improve your current situation, to make you better at your relationship. Exercise improves your heart. So does your relationship. It improves your feelings, your thoughts, and your actions. If you constantly work on improving yourself, that takes practice, just like exercise. To continuously improve the process, to strengthen your mind, body, and spirit, just like exercise, takes time and practice to improve your mind, body, and spirit. Let's see if my clients and my listeners are putting enough exercise into their relationships. In my first segment, Everybody Needs a Little Push.
Everybody, 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 everybody needs a little push.
Everybody needs a little push.
Everybody, 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 everybody needs a little push. Everybody, 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 everybody needs a little push.
Dear Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I never realized that I had to do stuff to work on a relationship. I just hung out with my girlfriend and let life happen. Then I kept wondering why my relationships didn't last very long. I thought that maybe we just got tired of each other or we lost our attraction. My push moment came when my current girlfriend said to me You aren't trying anymore. I realized that I had to actually contribute to this relationship to keep it going. Brandon from Des Moines.
Thanks so much for your email, Brandon. I'm sure many people feel the same way you do. Whether you're in a relationship for a couple of months or for four decades, you come to the point in time where there may be some amount of complacency happening. You may turn around and look at your partner and say, the thrill is gone, or the excitement isn't there anymore. Well, what about the couples that don't have that problem? Are they doing something differently? I would say that they are. Let me give you a few examples. The couples that I talk to that have successful, sustainable relationships do something very simple. They exercise. They continuously practice at it. They don't take each other for granted. And most importantly, they work on themselves and understand that their partner needs to work on themselves, and they both give them the space and the trust to do it. They look upon the relationship as a partnership. And because of that, they realize that the relationship has to sustain itself because each person is equally responsible for making that happen. So the best advice I can give you right now is to tell you that you should keep remembering what it was like for you in the beginning. Bring the excitement back. Take an interest in what she has to say. Plan to do new things. Really listen and remember what it was like when you first started dating. Here's another letter from one of my listeners.
Dear Pushy Broad from the Bronx,
I truly think that the reason my relationship with my husband is so successful is because we are constantly working at it. We're not complacent with each other. We spend quality time together. We are truly interested in each other's lives. We are always working on our communication and working on ways to surprise and delight each other. Make no mistake, it does take work, but the rewards are immeasurable. Here we are, happily married for 30 years. Taryn from Portland, Maine. Thanks so much for your email, Taryn. I am very heartened to hear that there are many great relationships out there. And every single one of those I talk to tell me that they're constantly looking for ways to enrich that relationship. They're bringing new things to the table all the time. Some of them are very simple, like getting out of their environment and taking different vacations, improving individual looks so you look good for your partner and you feel good about yourself and you make yourself more attractive to another human being. And some of that, sometimes that means getting new things and doing your hair a different way or going back to the gym. Sometimes it means going out on date night and making that special. Maybe planning a surprise for your partner or taking some great risk together that you've never done before, going on an adventure. Paying more attention to each other to make things really special. Spice up your sex life in a new and different way. Change it up. Changing it up doesn't make things complacent or boring. It now is making some things exciting and different. And it doesn't have to be work. If you look at it as work, you're never going to do it. But if you take a look at it as exercise and realize that if you were to exercise only 15 or 20 minutes a day, your body would be in great shape. So why don't you look at your relationship like that? That 15 or 20 minutes a day of paying special attention and understanding what your partner really wants and needs and learning how to do that over time makes a beautiful, sustainable relationship.
In continuing the theme that marriage and or relationships take exercise, there are many different things that you can do on a daily basis to maintain a healthy relationship or a healthy marriage. There are so many different articles on the web from Family Today and Crosswalk and Psychology Today, but basically, here are a couple of little things that can be done on a daily basis just like an exercise regime that can enrich your relationship and your marriage. You can start every day with a smile and a kiss. If you both feel that your wedding rings will make you both feel happy and secure, then wear them. Go on a structured date with your spouse at least once a week. Whatever it is, away from everything. Don't talk about the kids. Don't talk about the finances. Don't talk about the world's troubles. Just stare into each other's eyes and get some of the romance back once a week. Or go to a movie you're both going to laugh at. Or go to an event that you might really like and enjoy together. Remember to try to be polite to each other. You are polite to strangers. You're polite to coworkers. Try to be polite and kind to the one that you love. And with politeness comes kindness. Be gentle and kind. Remember that harsh words and actions have no place in your vocabulary or in your home. Choose to be kind to those who love you and to those whom you love. Try to remember that you must accept people's differences. Remember when you once thought that your spouse's idiosyncrasies were cute? You need to remember that you cannot change another human being. The only person that you can change is yourself. So remember those words and understand that with kindness comes tolerance and patience, because you would expect the same and the same reaction towards you from the person that loves you. Remember also to reach out and touch the person that you're with. Affection, physical and verbal, is a wonderful way to keep rekindling the relationship and also laughing more together and trying to really listen to what the other person is saying. You don't have to always go in and fix the problem or solve it, but you do have to be an active listener. So turn off the TV, turn off the computer, put your phone away. Give your spouse your full attention. No computer, no internet, stay off your phone, stop texting all the time. Talk to your partner. Also, another way to continuously exercise your relationship is to encourage your partner. Give that person support so they can be a better person than they already are. And if you want to check in with your spouse during the day while you both are apart, then do that maybe once or twice a day. Little things like, I love you, I miss you, I'm cooking something special for dinner, or let's go out and do something fun. Something like that. Now, I know many of you think these things aren't important or they are mundane and simple, but sometimes we have to remember these things, the little things that will make a big difference in sustaining and nurturing your relationship. Doing it daily, just like exercise, so that you have a great foundation that's consistent and nurturing. Remember that there is another person in this house with you. Another person, whether they're living with you or you have decided to be in a monogamous relationship, you now have decided that there are two people here going forward, trying to take a journey together. And because of that, it takes work to keep that journey going as best as you can. So remember the small things, because in many ways they'll make the biggest differences. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Everybody needs a little push. On TransformationTalkRadio.com and podcast stations everywhere. 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Is marriage still a viable institution? What are the main reasons people decide to get married? And are those reasons different now than they were in the past? Let's hear from some of my clients and my listeners on this topic. Let's see what their push moments were that helped them stay together and enjoy being married.
Dear Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I am a product of divorced parents. I never really gave much thought to having a successful marriage because of it. I am very glad to say that my wife and I have been happily married for the past 6 years. I think a big part of maintaining my happy marriage is doing the exact opposite of what my parents did. In fact, my push moment was in realizing that I could learn from their mistakes and not duplicate them myself. Thomas from Quebec City.
Thanks so much for your email, Thomas. Let's take a look at some statistics. If you are a product of divorced parents, is it more likely that you will end up divorced? Or is there a good chance that you will stay happily married? Well, this is the study done by Marriage and Family Review. They looked at whether or not experiencing divorce as a child played any kind of role in later breakups, or whether it was merely the conflict that played the key role. Their researchers analyzed data from American families stretching from 1987 to 2003 to track how children of divorce and unhappy marriages turned out. The researchers found that children who experienced high levels of family conflict, not divorce, but conflict within the family, meaning parents fighting, stress about money, abuse, conflict in a family that stayed together, were likelier to get divorced as adults by experiencing that conflict. And it's interesting to note, children in high conflict families whose parents got divorced fared the same as children in low conflict families whose parents stayed together. So what does this mean? High levels of conflict are the big problem. Divorce can actually be part of the solution. When divorce causes parents to separate, basically there is no more conflict. So they do not expose their children to that conflict. And because of that, children seem to live in a more peaceful home. So their chances of having a happy marriage is just as good as children that come from a minimal conflict home. So it's no surprise that you were able to sustain a happy marriage. In addition, they found that children learn from the experiences of their parents. So if you see something as a child that you absolutely do not want to duplicate in your life, it becomes a negative reference for you so that you know those experiences are not something you're going to bring into your adulthood. So the ultimate lesson here is, if the parents are happy, even if that happiness is attained by getting divorced, then your kids will be happier too, and have a greater chance of a happier marriage. Here is another email from one of my listeners. Dear Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I finally convinced my husband after 15 years to take a second honeymoon, and it was well worth it. We were able to go away, just the two of us, leaving the kids, work, and the problems of everyday life at home. For the first time in a long time, we were able to relax and rekindle our romance, just the two of us. My push moment came when I realized that we both needed the time away from everything, spending quality time together, just to rekindle the romance in our lives and to make our marriage stronger. Lily from San Antonio, Texas. Thank you so much for your email, Lily. The thing that really stood out for me is the fact that you said that after 15 years, you finally decided to take a second honeymoon. I'm sure for most couples, that may seem normal and natural, and maybe a lot of you out there are saying, wow, I never had a chance at a second honeymoon. But the point, or even a first honeymoon for that matter, but the point of all of this is you must take vacations. and you must take them at least once a year, and you must also take them just with your husband or your spouse, your husband or your wife or your partner. Leave the children home. And I don't care if it's only for 2 or 3 days or an overnight someplace, but preferably a week-long vacation, just the two of you. We all know what the benefits are of taking a vacation. You can take a look at any scientific research or study. You can Google it a million times and you will find all of the social and physical and mental benefits of taking a vacation. Our scientists have told us for a very long time how important it is for us to go on vacation for the physical and psychological benefits, including reducing stress and promoting overall well-being and happiness. But in addition to the benefits for each individual, there is a big benefit for the couple spending quality time away, and it can be very enriching and an enriching marital experience. In fact, it not only will be positive, but may help to strengthen and save your marriage. A vacation gives married couples a chance to rediscover one another. If you get away from all the hassles and you spend time together in a totally different place, you can strip down all the barriers and help rediscover the foundations of what made you a couple at the start of your marriage. A vacation gives you the opportunity to put some fun and friendship back in your relationship. It's time to get away from all of the conflicts and all of the worries of the fast-paced world that you live in. Try something new. Try a new activity together to increase the fun. Taking a vacation allows you both to recharge and re-energize. A vacation can also regenerate your sex life. A vacation can help promote emotional bonding, deepen the marital connection, and provide a much-needed break from your daily focus, which may be superficial, in order to just get the job done. Hopefully, you have a new bonding and can rekindle the communication that you had before the children came, or at least strengthen what you already have. Many couples have said to me what some of you are thinking right now, and that is, I don't have the time. It's impossible to get away. We just can't do it. Well, evidence has shown that, believe it or not, you have to do it. You can't afford not to take a vacation from your life. You can't afford not to spend some quality time with your partner or your spouse to rejuvenate and rekindle your relationship. And that, of course, is leaving your laptop and all of your social media connections and all behind you, so that the only thing that you are responsible for is answering emergency calls from your family. If you let your work follow you into this vacation, it is never a vacation. But I need you to understand how much you will re-energize not only yourself as an individual, but the two of you as a couple. Remember, you can't afford not to take a vacation together.
And now that we're coming up on Valentine's Day, it's a perfect time to get away. We'll be right back.
We've all had a push moment, and the Pushy Broad from the Bronx wants to hear some of yours. If you'd like to share your most defining moments for her Everybody Needs a Little Push segment, or want to ask a question for her No or Yes segment, or maybe you want to share your 10 minutes of tears moment, you can email her at ellen@pushybroadfromthebronx.com. We love reading all of your comments, questions, and push moments. You can be a part of an amazing group of people and get more access to the Pushy Broad from the Bronx by becoming a part of her email list. If we air your question or comment on the Pushy Broad from the Bronx podcast, for privacy purposes, we will change your name to protect the innocent. Or the guilty. We don't know. We're not judging. If you aren't ready to share with her just yet, or if you want more Pushy Broad from the Bronx goodness, join her Facebook group. Follow her on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to check out her website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com.
Do you want quick answers to things with no BS? Here's my segment, No or Yes.
When you need a quick answer, no BS. Ask the pushy broad and she'll say no or yes.
Dear pushy broad from the Bronx, does it matter that I am always the one in the relationship that plans everything for us to do? The answer to that is no. It doesn't matter that you're the one that's always planning things. I can't tell you how many couples tell me the same thing. Basically, what happens is this. I have found in every single couple that there's always one person that's the planner. One person is the planner, and the other person is the one that goes along with the planner. And I usually found that this is the case because one person actually plans better than the other person. But the problem with that is, it seems that the planner always seems to resent being the planner. And then when the other person tries to plan something, the so-called planner in the relationship always finds a way to take control and criticize the person who doesn't always plan. So go with it. If you're the planner in the relationship, then that's a great role to have. So take it and do it. If you were planning something and your partner didn't want to go along with you, then that would be the problem. But as long as you plan and they comply, then I don't think there's anything to worry about. The other thing is, if you plan, you don't have to plan with only your opinion on things. Ask your partner what they think. It still doesn't mean that you can't make the arrangements, but you're still getting input from your partner as well. So don't worry about planning things. This is obviously part of what you enjoy. So embrace it. Here's another no or yes question from one of my listeners. Dear Pushy Broad from the Bronx, should I be concerned about the lack of romance in my relationship? The short answer to that is yes. Especially if you had romance before. If you never had romance and you're glad about it, then you don't have to be concerned about it. But if you had romance and you don't have it now, yes, you should be concerned. And that means a conversation with your partner. And I also need you to take a look at yourself. Are you taking care of yourself? Do you find yourself attractive? I find that most people that tell me that they have no more romance in their life has a lot to do with self-esteem, either on the part of yourself or your partner. It takes a serious conversation. It may take a coach or it may take a therapist. But yes, if you've had romance in your life before and you don't have it now, it's time to talk about it.
In a composite article on the Power of Positivity website, which references Psychology Today, Bustle, MoreSelfEsteem.com, Everyday Health, and YourTango.com, they talk about the 10 ways that low self-esteem can certainly destroy a relationship and how to avoid it. So if we're talking about putting more romance into your life because it is waning, the problem may rest with your self-esteem or your partner's self-esteem. So if you think that's the case, then think about the fact that you may have started having limiting relationships. Because when you have low self-esteem, the article says, you're not very confident. This can make it harder for you to approach other people and for other people to approach you. So sometimes you're willing to commit yourself to the person who just expresses interest in you. You become less discriminating about who you choose. You may even be willing to put up with behavior that doesn't satisfy you because you feel lucky to have anyone at all, even though you are aware you are not happy. So if you are thinking in your relationship that the romance is waning, I want you to take a look and see if this is the relationship you want to be in at all, and you are just settling because you don't feel good enough to get anybody else. But when you begin to work on feeling better about yourself and having more confidence, your relationships will truly branch out. You'll not only have more romantic relationships, but that will carry on through friends and work relationships as well. Also, You may be suffering a lack of romance in your relationship if you suffer from a lack of confidence. If you have a lack of confidence, you don't feel that what you want to bring to the relationship is worthwhile. So the more self-confidence and self-esteem you have, the better relationships you'll have with your partner. You'll never feel like you're being taken advantage of, and you'll never feel that your voice isn't truly heard. When you have lack of self-esteem, your self-expression becomes a challenge. You may begin to hide and not tell your partner what you really need. You may find it difficult to express your thoughts and your feelings so that the relationship will begin to diminish. So in order to exercise the relationship, you have to understand that you have to be constantly building your self-development and self-expression so that you can rise to the challenge of bringing to the table positive self-development to this relationship, which will automatically put a positive spin on the outcome of the relationship. One of the ways that relationships also wane is if you're constantly taken for granted. If you have low self-esteem, sometimes people tend to take you for granted. Are you now in a relationship where both of you are taking each other for granted? Where you know he's going to be there for you always, or you know that she's going to be there for you always so that you don't work on it anymore? You don't take care of yourself? You don't do the little things you did before? You find it difficult to stand up for yourself or say no or assert your boundaries? It takes effort, but in the long run, you'll be able to avoid these things if you realize that low self-esteem is something that people look for in order to take control of another human being. So the more self-esteem you have, the more you are able to stick up for yourself, the more you are able to set boundaries, and the more you are able to bring a positive energy to this relationship. Because positive energy becomes contagious. If you don't take each other for granted, then you are really trying very hard to make sure that each one of you is treated specially. When you have low self-esteem, it may cause you to make mistakes in your relationships. One of those mistakes is just simply not putting enough energy or effort into your relationship because you get the feeling that it doesn't matter anyway. And then people become bored and complacent, and you begin to blame everything around you on how you feel. And that's the beginning of the breakdown in communication. So learning to build your self-esteem means that you'll be able to put the time and the energy into relationships that you deserve to have. Putting that extra effort into yourself also allows your partner to see what you're doing, which then may become a catalyst for your partner to do the same. Understand that low self-esteem also means that you have low self-acceptance. If you're unable to accept yourself, then you won't be accepted in your relationship. You have to learn to accept your flaws and your shortcomings, and you have to learn to accept your partner's flaws and shortcomings. I have said over and over again, the only person that you can change is yourself. So you have to learn to change you and change your reactions to things in order for your relationship to flourish. Low self-esteem can also cause misunderstandings in relationships because you lack confidence, and without confidence, you're not able to bring your best to the relationship. Make sure that your confidence is high, and make sure that you try to instill confidence in your partner. There's nothing wrong with telling your partner that you're proud of them, that you love them, that you know that they're capable of anything. There's nothing wrong with telling your partner that you love them unconditionally, even if sometimes you may not like them. That's okay. Relationships take exercise so that you don't bring drama into the relationship. Drama hurt feelings, exhausting arguments. All of these things can stem from one's low self-esteem, but really tear the relationship apart. Your relationship should not be based on bickering or fighting or exaggerating situations and out of proportion fights. And finally, the best way to bolster your self-esteem and others is to bring the fun back. Don't turn down invitations together. Make sure that you go out and laugh and have fun and have a good time together. Those are the biggest ways to bring romance and laughter back into your life. Remember what it was like in the beginning. You can certainly rekindle now. Remember, relationships take exercise. Here's another no or yes question from one of my listeners.
Is there a difference between being married and living together?
Believe it or not, this answer may surprise you. Yes, there is definitely a difference between being married and living together. Let me explain. It has become more and more the norm for couples to live together before they get married. In fact, the idea of cohabitation before a wedding has increased almost 900% since the 1960s. There are many instances where society still views cohabitation outside the marriage as living in sin. As advanced as we'd like to think we are, society still puts moral and ethical boundary dilemmas surrounding living together without the official ties of matrimony. There is also lots of evidence that many people who live together suffer from what they call the cohabitation effect that's been documented in many articles and studies. The cohabitation effect simply says that couples who cohabitate before marriage, and especially before an engagement or otherwise clear commitment, tend to be less satisfied in their marriages and more likely to divorce than couples who do not live together before those commitments ensue. These negative outcomes are called the cohabitation effect. There are other studies that have argued that it is not living with your partner before marriage that may result more likely in divorce, but it is the age you decide to enter into a cohabitation that could precipitate divorce in a marriage. In other words, the younger you are when you decide to live together, the less likely you're going to have a happy marriage should you decide to take the vows. But in addition to this information, there are other reasons why living together and being married are distinctively different. In fact, Jill Robbins wrote an article 2 years ago on Babbel, The 5 Reasons Married Life is Different Than Living Together. I agree with her logic. The first reason is that when you're married, you're now family. Your boyfriend's relatives are now your in-laws. The difference may not be evident right away, but marriage brings a sense of permanence and obligation when it comes to family. So whether you like it or not, you are going to have to conform to that obligation in some way or another. You are now not only obligated to your partner, but you have now made a commitment to each other's family. The second reason why living together and marriage are different is that you no longer seem to be on your best behavior. Many of the couples that I've talked to who live together still take the time to be considerate of other people in terms of their bathroom habits or the way they clean up after themselves or how much they try to keep up their good appearance and take care of themselves. But it seems that when you get married, you get tired and all of that goes. You're not so tidy in the bathroom anymore. You feel as if you can now take your partner or your spouse for granted in some way because you are bounded by a contract that makes it more difficult for him or her to walk out the door. This is not always the case, but it does mean that you take a certain amount for granted. So what Jill is actually saying is, when you're married, sometimes you don't try as hard as you did when you were living together. Coupled with that, Jill says that the moment you get married, sometimes little things will annoy you more. Seriously bad habits like sloppiness or that noise your dear one makes with his tongue clicking against the roof of his mouth or the snoring will really begin to get to you. In fact, you may be much less patient with those little endearments that beforehand you just seem to brush off. Another reason why Jill thinks that living together is different from marriage is there's obviously a lot more paperwork and conversations about money. And when they talk about money, it is always a difficult situation in marriage. Your bank accounts could be together. You have lots of things in both of your names that will require many more discussions than when you were living together. Jill's article goes on to say that even though some couples do pool their resources before they wed, and that does make things a little less complicated after the wedding, unless, of course, someone changes their name, then it's still complicated, and some people still keep separate bank accounts after the marriage, but paperwork and money will be a factor or a headache for married couples in an entirely new way than before they were wed. And the other way living together is different from marriage is that no matter what, society's perception of you will change. One can say that that piece of paper doesn't really make a difference, but society's perception of that piece of paper is very, very different. You might think marriage won't change your feelings about your relationship, but it will change the way the world at large treats your partnership. Even though many people who live together say that they don't need a piece of paper to be committed, the whole idea of saying those vows and having a legal contract in binding does make marriage a different animal from just living together. Here's another no or yes question from one of my listeners.
Should we get married for the sake of the children?
The answer to that is absolutely not. One should not get married for the sake of the children. For instance, if you already have children with your partner or your loved one, you should not get married because your little boy or little girl tells you that they feel better if you are married. Very simply, regardless of what society says and regardless of what your children say, only you and your partner have to decide is marriage right for both of you. Not because of the children, but because the marriage contract is the thing that both you and your partner want to do, whether or not you have decided to have children.
We'll be right back.
Are you ready to transform and empower your life by changing the way you think, feel, and act? Then it's time to schedule a coaching call appointment with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified empowerment coach and recovery coach. My style of coaching is part cheerleader and part drill sergeant, always in your corner and at the same time giving you the push you need to truly move forward and exactly what you need to take command of your life. If you are ready for the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I am ready for you. Visit my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says one-on-one coaching. Make an appointment today. Here's my next segment, 10 Minutes of Tears.
When you're feeling sad and kind of blue, rather lost and not really in it, don't stay angry, lost, or confused. 10 Minutes of Tears is certainly for you. Please cry, but only for 10 minutes.
Dear Pushy Broad from the Bronx, my husband and I are married for 25 years. At the 10-year mark, I found out that he was having an affair. We struggled through it. We worked hard on overcoming this dark time, and the last 15 years have been wonderful. It took a lot for me to come back to the table and work on our relationship, but I know that we're stronger and better for it. He and I are always aware of how we treat each other and never take each other for granted. We now have 25 years of a good marriage to show for it. Maggie from Scottsdale. Thanks so much for sharing, Maggie. When a couple has to struggle through a crisis or an infidelity, the couple has to decide whether or not they want to work at staying together. So for me, that requires more exercise, more of a commitment, more communication, and some soul searching on the part of both of you. So whether or not you did some therapy around it or life coaching around it or really came together and understood each other, those are the times in a relationship where you really do have to exercise every part of your being to make things work and to push past the difficult times. Most of the couples that do have affairs do seem to work it out. That's a proven statistic. And when that happens, many couples are much better for it, especially the way you've talked about in your letter. Couples have to resolve their unpleasant situations in order to move on and move past, and make sure that the situation is resolved and not just shoved under the rug. So I'm extremely glad that for the next 15 years, you have overcome this obstacle, continued to exercise your relationship, and now have 25 years of a great marriage to show for it. When difficulties and crises arise, take that 10 minutes of tears. Take all the time you need, and then learn how to heal together with continued exercise of that relationship. Dear Pushy Broad from the Bronx, my husband and I had some great times and some really tough times. I'm very glad that he's been here to share wonderful experiences with me. But most of all, I'm very grateful that we have supported each other through all of the difficult times. I sincerely believe that this is the true test of a good marriage. I could not imagine my life without my partner. After 25 years, I feel as strongly about him as the day we met. Carol from Cincinnati. This is actually a 10 minutes of tears moment that actually allows somebody to cry happy tears. That email was very touching, Carol. It tells us that we weather good times and bad times, just like marriage vows, in sickness and health, for richer or poorer. And you certainly have made it seem that you have weathered the storm to come to a realization that 25 years is just as good as the first day you met him. So take the time, cry the happy tears. I wish you congratulations and at least another 25 more years of happiness, love, and joy. Here's my last segment. I'm talking here. I'm talking here.
I'm talking here.
I'm talking here. Listen. Learn. Pay attention. I'm talking here.
In the United States, the institution of marriage produces 2.3 million couples getting married every year. That breaks down to nearly 6,200 weddings a day. According to the Pew Research Center, there is a factor that is changing, and that is that American men are staying single longer. According to the U.S. Census Bureau in 2017, the median age for first marriages has reached its highest point on record, 29.5 years old for men and 27.4 years of age for women who are getting married for the first time. The average number of guests invited to a wedding is approximately 178. One-third of those getting married each year have been married before. About $72 billion a year is spent on weddings, with the average budget being $20,000. So if you think that saying yes to the dress is going to stop anytime soon, the answer is, I don't think so. It might also interest you to know that globally, 55% of marriages in the world are arranged, and only 6% of those end in divorce. Although there are many reasons why people get married, Americans marry because they cite love as the most important reason. In fact, 9 out of 10 Americans, 88%, say love is their number one reason for getting married, even ahead of wanting to make a lifelong commitment, which only comes in at 81%, again according to Pew Research. People also get married for companionship, but that only comes in at 76%. This survey was done as late as 2013. Only 49% say they get married for the children because they want to have them and they want to have them in wedlock. 30% say they want to get married because they want their relationship recognized by their faith. 28% say they want to get married for financial stability. And 23% say they want to get married for legal rights and benefits. But the number one reason why people want to get married is love, love, love. As far as what helps people stay married, married adults said in a 2015 survey that having shared interests is 64% of the reason why they stay married. And also having a satisfying sexual relationship, that accounts for 61%. More than half, 56%, also named sharing household chores. So break out the vacuum cleaner, hand your partner the dust mop, have a wonderful romantic evening in bed, and plan your next vacation. Relationships take exercise. The constant building, toning, and strengthening that one needs to improve communication, spice things up, recharge and rejuvenate your relationship. Make sure that you're still learning about one another, finding out things that are interesting for both of you, the way you did when you first dated. Can you recall the last time you had a real conversation? Make sure it's about things that are meaningful and not only the things that keep us busy and take up most of our time, like work or family or community obligations. But talk about things that get you a little bit more emotionally involved or pique your interest. Do you still do the small things to show that you care? Are you bringing home a small little trinket? Are you giving her breakfast in bed? Are you making sure that he has a hot meal when he gets home from work? Just little things, intimate things, surprising things. Do you still try to be attractive and impress your partner? Do you try to keep your body in good shape? Are you feeling good about you? Are you taking the time to work on yourself? Are you holding on to your identity so that you don't mesh your identity with your partner and lose yourself in the process? All of these things take regular maintenance, the kind of maintenance that exercise does. A few minutes a day to ground yourself and remind yourself that you're in a relationship with another person. That means it takes kindness and caring and most of all consideration. Knowing that there are two of you here and you're not alone in your opinions or your thoughts, you'll compromise with another human being and strengthen
and recharge
in a constantly renewed relationship. Remember, relationships are exercise, and exercise has great rewards. This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening. And remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, New York.
The Pushy Broad from the Bronx would like to thank her production team, songwriter, composer, musician, and sound man, Sam Goche. voice artist and announcer, Taylor Boche. Oh, that's me. And thanks to collaborative writer and assistant production manager, Richard Torres. Virtual assistant and social media guru, Kimberly Studdard. Special thanks to Laura Kravitz, production manager, and Susan Herman, collaborative writer. And a very special thanks to Love Love Studios in Brooklyn,
Brooklyn,
for recording and mixing our music.
Here is disclaimer information that we are required to produce.
Professional coaches provide an ongoing partnership designed to help clients produce fulfilling results in their personal and professional lives. Coaches help people improve their performances and enhance the quality of their lives. Coaching services received from certified life coach Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, are not offered as a substitute for professional mental health care or medical care, and are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any mental health or medical conditions. The Pushy Broad from the Bronx is not acting as a mental health counselor or a medical professional. All comments and ideas offered by Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, are solely for the purpose of aiding her audience in achieving their goals, and hopefully keep you smiling in the process.